Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, October 19th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools that I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've used for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, and print it off and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either called in to get stepped through that worksheet process, so you can use that as a tutorial, or they've given powerful testimonials about how the application of this tool in their life has been highly beneficial. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, and then give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that'll let us know you want to have a conversation. Alternatively, you can give us send us an email. You can contact me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And we will read your questions or comments on the air and do our best to address them. And then if you're not able to listen live, you can catch the replay on the archive. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year, and today is the 292nd day of the year. I have recommended that people go back a couple days in their lessons to yesterday or the day before yesterday, where there is a description of what is the real world, and review that commentary, because it helps us understand that many of us have an experience of life that seems negative and bitter, hurtful, resentful, etc. And some of these lessons, like today's lesson, seem to go against that. Today's lesson simply reads, a happy outcome to all things is sure. And if you read that to enough people, you're going to get a lot of negative pushback because their lives are not happy and their physical, mental, emotional situations are not what they want it to be, etc. And therefore, if you go back and read this description of what is the real world, you can have a little bit of an insight into how the Course in Miracles can talk about how today is the day of stillness and peace, as was yesterday's lesson, or how it can say today a happy outcome to all things is sure, because they're talking about learning to look at what is underneath all of the things we see with our perception. And so the commentary for today's lesson is, God's promises make no exceptions, and the Creator guarantees that only joy can be the final outcome found for everything. Yet, it is up to us when this realization is reached. How long we let an alien will appear to be his... how long we let an alien view of the world appear to be opposing the Creator's view. So the end might be certain as far as the Creator's concerned, and yet we can create a perception which is full of conflict, bitterness, anger, frustration, hurt, negative judgment, etc. And that's up to us. Will we choose for love? Will we choose for the view that the Creator offers? Or will we continue to choose the pattern of our families and our inheritance that judges and thinks it knows better than the flow of creation itself? The lesson reads further, we thank you, Creator, for your guarantee of only happy outcomes in the end. Help us not interfere, because in interfering we delay the happy endings you've promised us for every problem that we can perceive and for every trial that we still think we must meet. Today's Course in Miracles experiment lesson from Pam Grout, as we're reading both of these and the Course in Miracles workbook lesson. And Pam Grout's lesson 292 reads, titled, Dampened by Low Expectations. She quotes Zora Neale Hurston as saying, Mama exhorted her children to jump at the sun. We might not land on the sun, but at least we will get off the ground. And Pam writes, before throwing his hat into the political ring, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker was advised to go see Mama, somebody or other, from the projects. Evidently, this Mama wielded a lot of political pull. So being a sharp guy, a Rhodes Scholar and a Yale lawyer, he, of course, chose to pay due diligence. He knocked on Mama's door, sat down for a chat, and soon enough, let her take his hand and tour him around the projects. Young man, she asked, tell me what you see here. Not sure exactly how to answer, he began a list. Well, there's a lot of trash, broken down cars, kids with no direction. Young man, she stopped him right there, as long as that's all you can see, that's all you will ever see. And he got it. He realized that it's our vision, our ability to imagine a better future that brings a better future into being. The world outside is a reflection of what you have inside, Booker says now. If all you see are problems, That's all there will ever be. Lesson 292. A happy outcome to all things is sure. So we can waste our time looking at the trash, the broken down cars, or we can move straight to the dude's guarantee. Joy is the final outcome for all. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary for that lesson. And as usual, we've got almost 50 minutes to talk. 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We'd be happy to entertain your comments, questions, requests for support in using a worksheet, clarification on something that you might have heard in the past 10 and a half years here on Mind Shifters Radio. Today's a Tuesday, so there will be a Mind Shifter support group available from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. This process that we engage in is a wonderful community of people, sometimes small and mighty, sometimes larger. You can find out how to join us if you're so interested at mindshiftersacademy.org. Please remember, if you go there, there's a separate page for the login information from Tuesday and one from Thursday. We had somebody, again, miss another Tuesday meeting because they were trying to log on with the Thursday login information. And I have all kinds of things to share if nobody raises a hand. But I'll give it a minute and see if somebody's got a comment or a question or wants to suggest a topic. I have been listening to some of the recorded meetings from the Integrative Mental Health Summit that happened the weekend before last, October 8th, 9th, and 10th of 2021. And lots of good stuff. If you're interested, it's not too late to go and purchase the recordings. And if you already attended the summit and you paid $25, they're only asking $125 to upgrade. If you haven't, they're asking for $150. And I believe they said there are 40 different experts. There aren't that many different recordings because some of them were a panel of six or more experts or four or more experts. And I am halfway through the discussion with Dr. Leela Masumi on integrative psychiatry, and I've got, you know, four or five notes and websites to look up. Just so you have an inkling, somebody asked, how can you research which nutritional supplement might be good for you? And she offers the website examine.com. And this is just a free, you know, there's some free resources there. There are some things they charge for, but it's a resource. If you want, if you know somebody who wants to treat any of their mental health issues in a way that is holistic, integrative, something other than just here's a list of symptoms. These symptoms match these people, so here's your medication. And another resource she offered was consumerlab.com. And this is a place where you can get independent verification of supplements that you might find at the store or in your health food. And these people go out and take these supplements and do the lab tests on them and just report, do they have in them everything that the label says they have in them? Do they have contaminants, et cetera? So all kinds of topics are available at the integrativementalhealthsummit.org and those recordings for $150 if you didn't attend, or $125 if you just upgrade your attendance. But topics like how hormones and metals affect women's health with Dr. Judy Bowman, how integrative mental health is different from functional mental health and conventional mental health or psychiatry, a discussion on faith and mental health, a discussion on mental health with technology and supporting mental health outcomes with technology, and like apps that give people access to a therapist or breathing monitoring, etc. Innovations in stress management, the trauma technique EMDR, and more. How to have transformational discussions about difficult topics with Dr. David Gruder. Bridging integrative medicine and Western medicine as a path to deeper healing. A panel discussion on hope for autism. The list goes on. So you can get access to that and upgrade or purchase it at integrativementalhealthsummit.org. There's also some things I wanted to share today. I have some nice connections on Facebook. People post a lot of garbage, but they also post some really nice things. And I was struck by the following thing that was posted. The water in your body is just visiting. It was a thunderstorm a week ago. It will be the ocean soon enough. Most of your cells come and go like morning dew. We are more of a weather pattern than a stone monument. We are more like sunlight on mist or summer lightning. Your choices outweigh your substance. Your choices outweigh your substance. And that goes along with another post. The universe responds to your frequency. This is so in alignment with Dr. Michael Rice's lectures. He has one titled Empowered to Heal. I highly recommend that two-hour video lecture, all of his, but that one resonates with this. That one's in alignment with this. The universe responds to your frequency. It doesn't recognize your personal desires, wants, or needs. It only understands the frequency in which you are vibrating. For example, if you're vibrating in the frequency of fear, guilt, or shame, you're going to attract things of a similar vibration. If you're vibrating at the frequency of love, joy, and abundance, you're going to attract things that support that frequency. It's kind of like tuning into a radio station. You have to be tuning into the music you want to listen to, just like you have to be tuned into the energy you want to manifest into your life. Change your mindset, and it will change your life. Fortunately for those listening, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice provide practical tools for you to change your mindset and your vibration. The reality management worksheet that I mentioned in the intro, that's available absolutely free, and hours and hours and hours of support in how to use that tool in your life, is available absolutely free. change your mindset, change your vibration, and you will change your life. And the last one I'll share says that you never really know the true impact you have on those around you. You never know how much someone needed that smile you gave them. You may never know how much your kindness turned someone's entire life around. You may never know how much someone needed that long hug or deep talk, or the ripple effects it has in their life and the lives of others that they interact with. So don't wait to be kind. Don't wait for someone else to be kind first. Don't wait for better circumstances or for someone or something to change. Just be kind, because you never know how much someone else needs it. Now, that's in my offerings for today, because I was having a session with someone last night where that was the topic, the idea of Indra's web, the connection of everyone and everything, the idea that everything is energy, including the human beings that you see around you and yourself, and all energy is connected and vibrational resonance connects us. And there's the movie that is kind of a hokey, a hackneyed, kind of a simplified version of this, but it's a universal truth that is represented in the movie It's a Wonderful Life, that usually comes out around Christmas time. And the story is of a man who, because of some financial shift right around the holidays and because of his interacting with a very negative person, he gets depressed and suicidal, and an angel stops him from throwing himself off the bridge into the icy water below and does a, here, let's take a look at all of the good things that have happened in the world because you were there. And then you get to decide if you want to end your life or not. But the fact of the matter is, you are important in this way, in this way, in this way. And the whole movie shows how the ripple effect of this one person and the choices he made has changed the world dramatically, changed the entire town he lives in, his family, friends and neighbors, etc. Well, this is just a universal truth in movie form. And many of us are not taught to pay attention to that, to appreciate it, to live our lives from the understanding of that. And so that's the encouragement for today and these readings. You're an energy being, and you're in an energetic universe, and everything you choose and say and do has impact. And so create accordingly. Create according to your awareness. And I had a gentleman, he's almost 50, in my office last night, and he was talking about having the feeling that he hasn't done enough in his life. And that's how we got onto this topic, because he was taking a look at societal issues, money accumulated, dramatic impact that he could see on others, etc. And I started trying to help him understand that his impact in the world, just being who he is far broader and deeper and more powerful than he could ever imagine. And that's true for everyone, every person listening to this, every person on the planet. And if you come to doubt that, without actively stepping into questioning, then here's one of the observational exercises you can engage in. Think about some of the more influential experiences you've had with people in your life, whether it was in your single-digit years or your teen years or your 20s. Think about the impact that a teacher, a friend, a neighbor, one of your parents had, and or take a look at how some of the people that you watched do things, and when you observed them, you thought, oh my God, I never want to be like that, because you were able to see how unsatisfactory the consequences of their behaviors were. Even that, even my mistakes have probably benefited some people. You know, so my life at times and my social faux pas or selfishness or anger outbursts may have led to be a cautionary tale for somebody. Right? It could be a warning for them that, hey, I don't want to end up like that guy. We are all connected, and every choice we make carries consequences. And I was trying to help this 50-year-old man understand that his life has been miraculous, and that achieving something in his life has already happened. And to achieve more, all he has to do is keep being the best version of himself that he can be in whatever feels good to him. And he began to see it, but by the time we started working specifically with some of the events in his life and some of the things that he could see, the huge impact that some people had in his life that he wouldn't normally think of. And those people that made such a huge impact in his life, they weren't like, you know, General Colin Powell, who died yesterday, who was a Secretary of State and involved in wars and involved in global agreements for peace and establishing engagement rules between countries. You don't have to be at that level. Most of us are not at that level. The vast majority of people on the planet are making tremendous impact just by being the best person they know how to be each moment they're alive. And that's our encouragement here. If you pick up the tools that are offered at whyagain.org and start applying them in your life, you will, before long, become one of the healthiest people you know. If you continue to work on those, application of those tools in a way that seems right for you as often as you're moved to do it, your life will improve, and by extension, so will the lives of everybody you interact with. And you probably won't get to see all the ways in which other people's lives benefit from interacting with you. That has to be okay, because your eyes can only see so far, your ears can only hear so much, and the fact of the matter is we're not intended to experience all of these things directly, because the conscious logical mind doesn't have that kind of capability. To borrow a term from, you know, the computer world and the internet, our conscious logical mind doesn't have that kind of bandwidth. So the offering for today is that the thing that you call a body is a very temporary thing, communication device, depending upon which resource you look at to label it, to give it a label or a function. Way of Mastery calls it a communication device. But from the thing I read earlier, the water in your body is just visiting. It was a thunderstorm a week ago, and it will be the ocean soon enough. Most of your cells come and go, like the morning dew. We are more like a weather pattern than a stone monument. We're like sunlight on mist or summer lightning. Please understand, it's your choices that outweigh your substance. What are you choosing? Frequently I send notes to people asking them to choose joy. Actively throughout the day, a choose joy. I've got the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership book that I've been talking about. And in that book, one of the chapters I was listening to this morning talks about appreciation. And I want to, it's lesson 7 in that book, I want to talk about how valuable it is to generate appreciation. And the commitment is simply, I commit to living in appreciation, fully open to both receiving and giving appreciation. And for most of the people listening, it won't be a surprise to hear that most people have a harder time receiving appreciation than giving it. The problem with our culture is that many times people move from living in appreciation and gratitude to living in entitlement. And when we're living in entitlement, we're stuck in the Me Too world. And in the Me Too world, in this work, that's a highly unproductive space to be in. So for the purposes of this chapter, their definition of appreciation is sensitive awareness is one aspect of it, and the first step of appreciation is awareness. Simply paying attention. And that requires being present in the moment and bringing all of our attention to the current person or situation. But sensitive awareness implies more than simply paying attention. It involves the capacity to make fine distinctions. For example, someone who appreciates art notices subtle differences in minute details, such as brush strokes, a variation in color, the effects of light and shadow. Similarly, a wine connoisseur appreciates wine and can detect fine flavor distinctions from the wood of the barrel, the quality of the soil in which the grapes were grown, etc. Now, the average layperson who doesn't fully appreciate art or wine overlooks these subtleties. Oh, that's a very pretty painting. Or, oh, what a tasty bottle of wine. These are the kinds of appreciations that they have, but they are a long distance from the statements made by somebody with a fine-tuned awareness. And the second aspect of this kind of appreciation is an increase in value. So when someone appreciates, it grows in value. When something or someone appreciates, it grows in value. Like if I have an investment and it appreciates, you know, I invest in a classic car, and it grows in value over time. Someone who lives in this commitment has the intention of having their relations, circumstances, and experiences become more valuable over time. As you develop mastery of this commitment, you'll notice this increase in value occurs rather easily. It's from the intention rather than the effort that the appreciation and increase in value occurs. So, they give a whole list of ways that people deflect or push away or downgrade or dismiss or try and reciprocate appreciation rather than just fully accepting and receiving appreciation from others. And they want us to understand what the Mindshifter Radio and support group work also understands, and that is that receiving is a gift. So if somebody goes to great lengths to pick out a housewarming gift for me or around Christmas sometimes I've got people that send me things because I did therapy with them years ago or whatever. And if I accept it and send a nice thank you, that's a gift back to them. If I reject it and say, you know, I'm not allowed to accept gifts, et cetera, I cut off that flow of energy. And you might remember from past days when we're talking about this book, they're all about increasing the flow of energy. That's where the 15 commitments of conscious leadership are directing us to be more flowing with our energy, to get more access to the energy of life that is available to us. So here's an exercise they have. Look around wherever you currently are and find every white item. Looking 360 degrees around the room or the outdoors, wherever you are right now, find every white item. Keep track, make a mental note. And now, focus on just a sheet of paper and list all of the green items that your eyes just moved past. And then look around the room and see how much you missed. This exercise is a powerful demonstration that we notice what we're looking for. It's called the reticular activating system in the brain. It literally screens out things that we're not looking for. It literally shows us what we're looking for. So if I step into this exercise and I say, I want to learn to notice, appreciate, and then give appreciation to people more. I'll eventually start to see things I didn't see before. And what a gift if I can notice with appreciation specific things about my coworkers, my friends, my significant others, and formulate that in a way that fits their four elements of masterful appreciation. These are the four elements: sincerity, unarguable truth, specificity, and succinct language. So, sincerity. For appreciation, in this case, it must be real and true. If it's not genuine, it's not appreciation. Insincere comments often create more harm than good because people come to doubt the intention. Hey, are you trying to manipulate me? However, masterful appreciation doesn't only involve your head, what you think, it also involves your heart, what you feel, and your body, what sensations you're experiencing. The second factor is unarguable truth. So appreciation is most effective when it is unarguable, as in commitment four. We've talked about that before. If I speak about my thoughts, my emotions, and my physical sensations, it's not something that other people can effectively argue. They might choose to make negative comments about it, but if it's my actuality, if it's my personal experience, then I'm not inviting argument. I'm just sharing. When I do that, it prevents any judgments, comparisons, conscious or unconscious challenges. In the context of appreciation, this is the difference between saying, wow, that was a great report, which is an arguable statement, or saying, I appreciate you for the detailed appendices in this report. I noticed how at ease I felt having all the information at my fingertips. That's not arguable. I appreciate it is not arguable. I felt at ease is not arguable. The third factor is specificity. Sometimes appreciation is expressed in vague terms, leaving the recipient guessing at its true meaning. I like your shirt. Well, that can make the person wonder whether the statement referred to the color, the fit, the fabric, or some other attribute. Those who are practicing the art of appreciation use specificity and clarity. And the fourth point is succinct language. A masterful appreciation can be completed in a single outbreath, meaning everything you can say in one exhale. It's like the best chocolate. A little goes a long way. And like chocolate, too much can spoil the experience. Additionally, once you go beyond one outbreath, usually the appreciation moves over into what is arguable. So here's the commitment in action. Pat Christian and her team at Hope Lab are dedicated to this commitment, and they have devised a multitude of ways to express appreciation to one another on a weekly, if not a daily, basis. One of our favorite examples appeared at their year-end holiday party. A couple of weeks before the event, the organization sent out to each staff member a list of their fellow teammates' names. Each member was asked to write 3 to 5 qualities that they most appreciated about each of their colleagues. These qualities were then gathered for each person, and a list was made. This list was then made into a word cloud with the help of an internet app found at www.wordle.net, wordle.net. Then at the holiday party, these word clouds were displayed around the room with the names of each person hidden behind a flap of paper. As the staff members wandered through the gallery, they were asked to guess which word cloud they thought was theirs. Then they also had a contest to see how many of the word clouds the other partygoers could correctly identify with the person that they described. One of the team members was new to the organization, so for her word cloud, the staff chose words to describe how they'd gotten to know her during the interview process, and they included qualities described in the letters of recommendation they'd received about her. We spent time with the group directly after this event, and many of them shared their gratitude for the experience of being truly seen by their colleagues. Some were surprised by the qualities represented. One man with a twinkle in his eye said, "I had no idea how much my humor was appreciated here and how funny others think I am." Critch Mercenson, who often creates these kinds of experiences at Hope Lab, has just released a collection of ideas on how to encourage appreciation and connection in the workplace. For more information, go to Deckaholic, DeckaHolic.com. And then you can go to /lib/check-in-deck and check out their, quote, check-in deck. So, appreciation is more than just, oh, I'm so glad I know you, or I love you, or... And if you want more on this, you can check out Kathleen and Gay Hendricks' work, because they are the mentors, two of the primary mentors for this group that wrote the book 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. And they talk a lot in their work about the value of learning to express appreciation in a relationship, within a relationship. And one of the keys in their work is to be specific. So if you have a son or a daughter, if you have a husband or a wife, if you have a best friend, it's wonderful to say, I love you. It's wonderful to say, I appreciate you. But that's not exactly what they're talking about here. What they're talking about here is, I really appreciate how much attention you pay to me when I'm speaking. Or I really appreciate how much you pay attention to your appearance, how well you take care of yourself physically. Or I really appreciate the extra effort you go into to help other people around you feel comfortable. Or I really appreciate your eye for decorating, your artistic sense. So the more specific, the better, and to a great degree, the more often, the better. This art of appreciation, this gift of appreciation is a boon to relationship. Who do you have in your life that could benefit from knowing specifically, briefly, directly, genuinely, what you appreciate about them? Give them that gift. Give yourself that gift. Deepen your relationship with the gift of appreciation. And there's a couple resources for expanding that, coming up with ways to do it. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We have about 10 minutes before we launch into the second hour of the show. And the second hour of the show is going to be a replay. Michael and Jeannie are otherwise occupied today. And so we are going to be replaying Getting the Stress You Need, Part 1 and Part 2 tomorrow. So Getting the Stress You Need will be our lecture from Michael and Jeannie Rice coming up for the second hour. And we have 10 minutes to take your comments or questions about anything in the extended intro or monologue today. 563-999-3581. Any questions about appreciation, about the web of connectedness that we all live in? Some traditions, the Hindu tradition, call it Indra's web. In our Western physics, they call it Planck's constant. It's the energy that connects all things, and it truly does exist in our world. It truly is mind-bending how we're all connected. 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1. Let me know what your thoughts, comments are from today's monologue. And get ready, buckle up for Getting the Stress You Need, part 1 today and part 2 tomorrow. Going once, going twice, going 3 times. So if there aren't any comments or questions, I will go ahead and start Getting the Stress You Need, part 1. And we'll be back again tomorrow for a live show in the morning at 11 Central. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Blessings.
Welcome to the workshop, Getting the Stress You Need. Tonight we're going to take a little different look at stress and its impact on our lives than the way the culture usually looks at stress. And we're going to start to identify how stress is created and the role that it plays in our lives and how absolutely necessary stress is. Because without stress, there wouldn't be life. If you didn't have the stress of thirst, you wouldn't drink. And without that signal and not drinking, you'd die with the lack of water. If you didn't have the stress that comes from the feelings of sitting on the tack, you wouldn't get off of the tack. So those stressors are necessary. And we find that there are two different qualities of stress, one of them constructive and one of them destructive. And we want to look at exactly how those stresses are created, exactly how the mind produces stress, so that we can take charge of that process. A lot of times our culture is set up in a way that creates stress in us, or at least that triggers stress in us. We're trained into those stresses, and we find ourselves thinking things that we'd rather not think, saying things we'd rather not say, doing things that we'd rather not have done, and not realizing why that is. And I'd offer that the reason why we say what we say, why we do what we do, is because we have stressors that promote and create those behaviors. What you'll find ultimately is that the human mind is a stress management device. The human mind, you know, there are theories that say the human mind, you know, does what it does to protect its ego and do all sorts of things. And in reality, what it does is it very, very well manages stress. And we'll see that there are different states of mind that you can come from in managing your stress. There are two states of mind in which, in attempting to manage stress, you will find that you continuously increase your stress. Your behaviors will produce more stress. And then there's a frame of mind, a state of mind, in which your mind can accurately guide you to reduce your stresses. And we'll look into some ancient teachings and how they referred to that process of managing your stress. Has anybody here got someone in your life that if they would just be different, if they just change, everything in your life would be wonderful? Anybody have someone like that? Okay, so we've got lots of yays on that one. Well, have you ever, in trying to avoid that person, has anybody ever taken the geographic cure where you go to the other side of the country where people will be different, and then the person that picks you up at the airport finishes the sentence that the person that dropped you off started, and there's your stressor again? What's the game? What's happening here? Well, as you understand how this mind is managed, and we're going to come from some ancient teachings in looking at this process of producing stress and reducing stress and managing the mind, and what are the laws that govern that process. I'm going to ask you if you'd allow yourself, if you're at home watching this video or if you're in the audience here, I'm going to ask you for a moment if you just kind of get quiet. Go inside of yourself. And in getting into that quiet space, I'm going to invite you to go through a series of feelings. So if you would just kind of close your eyes, go inside. And I'm going to ask you first to allow yourself to feel sadness. Would everyone do that? Let yourself feel sadness. Notice as you feel sadness, what happens to your breath. And then I'm going to ask you to shift from sadness to fear. Let yourself for a moment feel fear. And then I'm going to ask you to shift once more and allow yourself to feel anger. And then once more, I'm going to ask you to shift into feeling intimidated. Notice where your breath is and what's happening with your breath. And then just open your eyes and come on back to our workshop. Does anybody feel more stressed now than you did 5 minutes ago? Is anybody experiencing any more stress? Hands going up, head shaking. Okay, great. All right. So how was that stress created? What did you do to feel each feeling that you just felt? Anyone? What did you do?
Created some pictures of each situation.
Okay, so you created some pictures of situations. What did you use? I'm going to invite you to identify what you used to create those pictures. What did you use?
Used my memory.
Used your memory, okay. But there was something in your memory that you used specifically. What was it? Do you have an insight into that? Okay, but to get to what bothered you, what did you do?
Imagination.
Okay, you imagined. How did you access what was in your imagination?
Feeling.
Okay, you felt it, but what did you do to get to the feeling? You had a thought. You had to think about it. You had a thought. Now notice the impact of thoughts on your physiology. Now, we just did this little 2-minute experiment. You had a series of feelings. Whose feelings were you feeling?
My own.
Your own, okay? First thing established. Whose thoughts caused those feelings?
My own.
Your thoughts caused your feelings. Now, think about that person that if they just change, everything would be different. And kind of key into the situations you just went to and the feelings that you have and the stress that you feel. And how many find that the feelings that you have match, in just this little offhanded exercise, match what you felt in relationship to that person who you said earlier, if they just change everything, your life would be wonderful. Do you see a match there? Okay. Who's the common link in producing those feelings? Who's there every time it happens to you? No, couldn't be. Well, I have some good news and some bad news. There's only one problem in your life and you're it. That's the bad news. Fortunately, there's a solution. The solution lies within you as well. And as you recognize that you're the one that's there every time it happens to you. I mean, think back in your life. Yesterday, last week, last month, last year, 10 years ago, if you experienced any of these feelings, whose thought had to be resonating, had to be firing in you to feel those feelings? They had to be yours. Now, if tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, or 10 years from now, whose thought has to be resonating in your energy field for you to feel those stresses? Has to be your own. How many expect to experience emotional turmoil like that at some point in the future? Why would you do that to yourself? I would offer there's only one reason. You're insane. We have been taught in insane thought structures in our culture. We've been taught to live in those insane thoughts. And we have those thoughts stored within our structure. And not understanding that those thoughts are stored within our structure, we produce stresses within us right down to and including the cellular level as a result of the thoughts we think. If you go into the opening words in the book of John, in the New Testament, and we're going to look not at the English translations that we usually see. We're not going to look at Greek sources, which are far, far removed from the original Aramaic. We're going to actually go back to the native language that those teachings came from. And what you find is in that Aramaic language, and the Aramaic language is the root language of five of the world's major religions. And what you find in that language is practical, here's how life works teachings, not theological, religious dogma. You find tools for living life. And if you go to the opening words in the book of John, we're generally told that the opening words say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. Well, actually, in the Aramaic language, what it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Your mind energy becomes your flesh. And if you put mind energy into your system that doesn't belong in your system, you are going to experience the effects of a negative stressor. If you deny responsibility and don't see that you're the one that was there every time it happened to you, then you will think that that stressor is someone else in your life. But you'll notice, once again, if you've been through that particular stressor 87 different times with 42 different people, you are the one that was there every time. You are involved in your life. And what shows up in your mind tells you more about what's in your mind than it tells you about what somebody else outside of you is doing. And so if you look at those feelings come from your thoughts. And your feelings are molecular. Your thoughts are molecular. Your stressors are molecular. There's a woman named Candace Pert, who is the former head of the Brain Bio-Research Unit at the National Institute of Health. And here's what Candace Pert says. And you'd almost think that she was peeking at the book of John when you hear this. Here's a medical researcher at a laboratory that says every thought we think produces a molecule in the body. And the quality of the molecule matches the quality of the thought. Your thoughts produce molecules in your structure. And then if you go to the cell biologist laboratory, the cell biologist will tell us that those molecules, which are called neuropeptides, travel throughout the system. And where the cell has a receptor site for those neuropeptides, the neuropeptide, that molecule that is produced by your thought, lands on that receptor site. And once it lands on the receptor site, once the cell picks it up, the cell replicates that energy structure within itself. And what you find is that every thought you think produces a result within your structure, and the results that you feel the effects of are the results that you've allowed yourself to think. And the molecules that end up floating around in your structure, landing on the cell, and producing cellular stress always come from you. They can't come from anybody else. And as you take responsibility for that, in fact, if you go to the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount, we're told there's a Beatitude that says, blessed are they who mourn their wrongs, for they shall be comforted. Now, I don't know, has anybody here ever gotten really excited about mourning your wrongs and felt really comforted as a result of it? It's a bit of a stretch for me. But if you go to the Aramaic language, what it says, first of all, the word blessed are they isn't there. In the Aramaic language. There's no word that resembles that in Aramaic. What the word in Aramaic is in that beatitude is tuvehun, and tuvehun is a three-part word. And basically what it says is this, is that a latent or an unconscious neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being, becomes your conscious possession, you who, and then where it says, we're told it says comforted out of the Greek translations, it says, you who look into your errors in thought. And then, it doesn't say you're going to be comforted. What it says in Aramaic is, you will be cured of mental stress. When you start to look into where your mind goes that produces the molecular structure that ultimately becomes your genetic structure and is passed on to the next generation, if you want to change that process, you've got to take responsibility for every thought you think, which means every molecule you put in your structure, which becomes literally a part of your cellular structure. 2,000 years ago, this man named Jesus, who was not a religious teacher, he was teaching how life worked, said, hey, you want to clean up your act? You want to clean up the stresses that are going on within your structure? Here's a key. Look into your errors in thought and clean them up. And when you do, you will be cured of mental stress. It's up to you to decide what you do with that. You can't count on somebody else in the world to support you in doing that. You're going to have to make the choice as to how you run your mind and how you run your life. It isn't up to somebody else. But oftentimes, because we don't understand how our stresses are created, it appears that it's run by somebody else. So what I'm going to invite you to do now is I'm going to invite you to pick a partner. If you're at home and you don't have someone there listening to this tape with you, I'll invite you to get a mirror out, and that will be your partner. And so I'm going to ask each in the audience, if you would, to pick a partner. And sit face-to-face with your partner, if you would. Now, if one person in each partnership would say, I'll be light, just to identify yourself so you've got a name, and one person in each partnership would say, I'll be peace. So we've got light and peace. We've got two partners. And I'm going to ask you to do an exercise of sending and receiving. You're going to get to send in doing this exercise, and you're going to get to receive. So I'm going to give instructions for both sides. What are you going to do when you're the sender? Then what are you going to do when you're the receiver? And then I'm going to ask one of you, and we'll give you instructions then as which one will start. When you're the sender, I'm going to ask you to get quiet, go inside, and find the deepest, quietest, most powerful love that you can. Eyes closed, shut down the visual stimulus. Find the deepest, clearest love that you can. Intensify that. Don't start yet because I've got to give the receiving instructions too. So intensify that love. And as you intensify it and can feel it flood your structure, then I'm going to ask you to open your eyes and send it out through your eyes to your partner. Okay? So that's what you're going to do when you're sending. Now, the receiver, we're going to ask you to, of course, keep your eyes open while your partner gets ready and prepared to send. And when they send, we're going to ask you to check out what, if anything, they're sending. So imagine that your partner is squirting water out through their eyes. And so you're going to check out the temperature of the water. So I'm going to ask you to take the palm of your hand, place your awareness there, and pass it across in front of their eyes between you. So it's going to pass, right, between you and the person who's sending. And be aware and feel what you feel on the palm of your hand. And then, so that you have a second reference point, you've checked it out with the palm of your hand, we're going to ask you to do exactly the same physical action, passing your hand between yourself and the person who's sending, only this time we're going to ask you to put your awareness on your face, just so you've got a second reference point to check out how what they're sending feels to you. Are there any questions about the sending and receiving, about what to do when you're the sender, what to do when you're the receiver? Anyone have a question? No? Clear? Question? Okay. When you're the sender.
Yeah, when you're the sender. And then you open your eyes to the sender.
You open your eyes and then direct the energy out through your eyes to your partner. Yes. Okay. Question.
To their eyes or just to them?
Just to them. To to them. You're going to be looking eye to eye, so you're going to send it to the just to their face, what have you. Yeah. Okay? Great. And the receiver is going to pass the hand and check out what, if anything, they're sending. Okay? We're going to ask you to just have a second reference point. So you've got reference point one, the surface of your hand. So you're passing it between the person who's sending, and just see, again, imagine they're squirting water on there. What temperature is this water? And then, so you have a second reference point, let the energy come to your face, and just shift your awareness from your hand to your face. Do the same physical action, pass it between you, and see if you notice anything different on your face. Just shifting your awareness from one place to the other. Okay? So light, would you send first? Okay, so light, if you'd be the sender. And as soon as you're complete, just reverse roles. Peace, you become the sender. Light, you become the receiver. If you're at home watching this video, do it in the mirror with yourself. See what you experience. Of course, preferably there's a partner there you can work with. Okay, did anybody notice anything? What happened? And if you would just speak loudly enough, we've got a microphone here. You might even move up toward the microphone and share what you experienced.
When I was receiving, I didn't feel anything until he, I don't know what was it, and then there was this line of heat.
Okay, so you found a shift as soon as he smiled. That's when you started to feel, and it felt like just a line, like a band of heat. Okay, great. Anybody else experience it differently? You can feel the warmth on your hand. Okay?
Joy.
So you went into an emotional response. So you felt joy. Okay. Not on purpose. It was just there. Great. Okay.
I just felt kind of more like there was more pressure.
So you could experience it on your hand as a pressure. Okay? All right. Anyone else experience it differently? So you could feel an energy of some kind on your hand as well as warmth. Okay?
Yeah, mine was like that, the warmth with the tingling.
Warmth and tingling sensation. Okay. Now, let's look another level. Is there anybody who's noticing a difference in your stress level right now from 5 minutes ago when you were focusing on those other feelings? It seems like the smiles are much larger at this moment than they were a few minutes ago. So you're noticing a difference. What do you notice?
It was very pleasant to be tender. It was very relaxing.
Okay.
Very good.
You found it relaxing, felt good. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, so you went from happy and to happy and exciting. Okay. Did anyone have any fatigue a few minutes ago whose fatigue level has changed?
Yes.
Yes? Most every head shaking, yes? Okay. Go ahead. What did you experience?
Well, I felt that when I was going to my hand, I feel it in my arm.
Okay, so your whole arm was able to feel the sensation. So you could feel it all over, physically. Okay. Your face definitely looks different than it did 5 minutes ago.
Oh, thank
you. Good.
I feel different.
Yes. Okay. Great. Anyone else?
When I went in as a receiver, the instructions you gave were to find that place of, you know, intense love.
Right.
But I noticed when I first went down, I ran into some obstacles, so I had to talk to myself.
So you had obstacles to go through to get to that feeling of love.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before I could really, you know, be with that, I had to kind of move them out of the way.
Okay. Great. Good catch.
It's a nice experience.
Good. Wonderful. So you have an assignment now. And your assignment is to do this exercise twice a day for the rest of eternity. And that's with another person. And then to do it with yourself twice a day in the mirror. And if you have any body image problems, do it with yourself twice a day in the mirror in the nude. And watch how things start to shift and change. Notice the difference in your stress level. This is the master stress reliever. Notice the difference in the way that you feel. Now, if you go back 2,000 years ago, they asked, you know, what's the most important thing in this thing called the law? And what the master said was, there's a condition of mind that you've got to create in order to be sane. Of course, I'm paraphrasing at this point. But there's a condition of mind that you've got to create before you do behavior. And when you start to see that condition of mind is the key to intelligence, and you see how the mind operates in that regard, it is mind-boggling. It is amazing. And so we want to look a little bit at how stress is created. What did you do to create the stresses you just experienced? And notice that you had a stress that went in the direction of behavior. You'll find that the end result of stress, generally speaking, is some form of behavior. Or non-behavior, which is also a form of behavior. There's a psychiatrist who used to work with people who were catatonic. And his specialty was getting the catatonic out of that catatonic state. And of course, the catatonic's a person who just sits and they're so stressed out they don't respond to anything. They're gone. And this fellow says that he never, in the technique that he used, he never had to get above the knee in order to take these people out of their catatonic state. And so here's what he'd do. He's working with people who are hospitalized. Maybe you're aware of what a hospital gown is like to be in. And here you are sitting in a chair in a hospital gown. And what this fellow would do is he'd sit in front of the catatonic and tell them, I know exactly what's happening for you, and I'm going to help you to get out of this catatonic state. And he would reach down and he'd pull a hair out of their ankle. And then he'd move up about an inch, and then another inch, and another inch. Said he never had to get above the knee. Now, what he did, perhaps knowingly or unknowingly, when you start to look at stress and how stress creates behavior, what he did was that he took advantage of an unconscious goal that people have. And in triggering that goal, and again, you don't have to let your imagination wander too far, to recognize what that goal is if you're sitting in a chair, catatonic, in a hospital gown with somebody pulling hairs out of your leg working up to your knee. You know, it's a pretty deep level goal there for most people. And we're going to see that goals are the key to stress. That when you set a goal in your mind, that goal creates stress, and that goal creates behavior. And we're going to look at how the process of goal setting works and how the mind operates and why it was so brilliant of this man named Jesus 2,000 years ago that said that the first requirement of the law was to hold a space of love when you think of God, of neighbor, and of self. Basically, what he was pointing out is the three major objects of attention for a human being. And what he was saying was that if you're going to set a goal in regard to any of those objects of attention, if you're going to go into any form of behavior, you better have the condition of love in your mind. And it's interesting to note that in the Aramaic language, there are 17 different words that have been translated with one English word, love. Now, if he knew what he was talking about, it would seem like it might be important and useful to know which word he used and what that word meant. Well, in the Aramaic language, the word he used was the word rachma. There is no similar word or concept or idea in the Greek language nor in the English language. There isn't a word for it. But that condition is, that word rachma is a condition in the mind. It is a condition of holding literally a filter in our minds over intentions. And when you start to see the chain of action in the mind when a stress happens, all of a sudden it just shines a light of brilliance on this man saying that the first law was hold rock, hold a condition of love in your mind. And so I'm going to draw a diagram, and this is a human head pointed in that direction, just in case you don't recognize it. And what we'll find is that in the frontal lobes of the brain, all of our intentions are stored. So we have this pool of intentions. And in the back of the brain, we have another pool. We have a pool of perceptions. So we have these two pools in the mind. Over each pool, there is a filter. Actually, there are three filters, three sets of filters. Over intentions, there is a fear filter. There is an hostility filter. And there's a filter that in Aramaic was called rachma. It's been translated as love, but more specifically, is a filter over intentions. And then what we'll find is that there are also three filters, and this is being verified at Tulane University, bone implant EEGs. They're finding with these bone implant EEGs three signatures coming from the brain, one that they've come to identify as hostility, one that they've come to identify as fear, and one that they've come to identify as love. They're documenting it medically. And so we have over this pool of perceptions a fear filter and hostility filter and another filter that in Aramaic was called kuba, which has also been translated. It's one, another one of the 17 words that's been translated as love. You say, well, okay, that's interesting, but so what? Well, what you'll find is that Your intentions are the raw material of your goals. Intentions are the raw material of goals. And so the quality of your intentions determines the quality of your goals. And there are three qualities of intentions that can come out of this pool according to the filter that is set. If one filter is active, the output of the other two is blocked. So whichever filter is operative in your mind will determine the quality of your intentions, your available intentions. And so if we have the fear filter active over intentions, what we'll find is that our intentions will be of a particular quality, and that is they will be negative. If the hostility filter is the active filter, then our intentions are going to be of a destructive quality. And if our Rachma filter is active, our intentions are going to be of a loving quality. Why would that be important? Because it is your intentions that ultimately lead to and drive behavior. Your intentions when converted to a goal. Let's look at how an intention can be converted to a goal and drive behavior. I'm going to ask you to cooperate with me if you would, and I'm going to ask you to imagine that out in front of you, about 3 feet in front of your face, there's a red sponge ball. Okay? And I'm going to ask you to reach your hand up and reach for that ball. And at about the halfway point in doing so, I'm going to ask you to change and decide, without changing the intention or the goal to reach for the ball, decide to pull your hand back away from it. Okay, so holding the intention, I'm going to go for the ball, and then about halfway there, I'm going to pull my hand back. And just see what happens. Give that a try. What do you notice happening in your arm? Okay, you can't do it unless you change your intention. Okay, what else? Anybody notice anything about your arm?
Tension.
It's tight. It locks up. You look at people in our culture, and you look at how their bodies are tense. Some people almost like rocks. And what you find is you've got conflicting goals happening. And when there are conflicting goals, conflicting chemistry takes place, conflicting behavior. Reaching your arm out to grab the ball is a behavior. Letting that behavior continue while changing and pulling away from it creates a conflicting chemistry in your structure. Your mind energy changes your chemistry. Is there anybody here that knows how to reach out and grab that ball? Is there anybody here that knows how to do that? Okay, you sure? All right, we have a man who says, I know how. Would you please explain to me? First of all, I want to know which brain cells have to fire in what part of the brain, and then which nerve pathways they follow to which muscles, and what exactly are the balances and counterbalances to raise your arm and reach out to grab the ball and close your fingers around it. Could you explain that process to us? Not likely, right? I mean, the truth is we don't have a clue how to do it. We do it, but we don't know how. Something in us knows how. Something in us follows instructions. Very important. You remember this guy 2,000 years ago said, of myself I do nothing. The Father within me does the work. We don't have a clue how to do this stuff. If it was left to us, it would never happen. But you set an instruction in place, and you've got the cooperation of the creative power of the universe within you, working in you and through you. And if you give it conflicting instructions, you're in trouble. And if you give it destructive or negative instructions, you're going to have a problem. And so the quality of intentions, we have this whole pool of intentions. The quality of those intentions determines ultimately the quality of our goals and therefore our behavior. Because as we trace this through and we go to the next step, what we're going to see is that our goals are the driver for the output of our mind, of our reality. And so to become aware of how this whole process operates, you see that the starting point is key. Now, why is it important what our pool of intentions is and which quality of intentions we bring forward? Well, our intentions are those things which are converted to goals. Goals drive behavior. I can remember when I was a kid being told this thing of the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Like, what does that mean? I mean, does that mean you're not supposed to have good intentions? No, it doesn't mean that at all. What it does mean is that you can have all the good intentions in the world, but if you don't convert them to goals, they will never impact your behavior. So we take an intention and we convert that intention to a goal. Now, today most people are somewhat familiar with computers. And let's take a look at the computer as a model for what's happening with these goals. The computer operates based upon the drivers that are loaded in the computer. For instance, if you want to see a picture on your screen, you have to have a driver for your screen. If you change to a different monitor, you're going to have to load a different driver. If you've got an IBM Pro printer hooked up to your computer, you need to have a driver in your computer that knows how to communicate with that printer in order for any output to happen. There has to be a driver. If I change from an IBM Pro printer to an NEC SilentWriter, I have to load a new driver in order to communicate with that NEC SilentWriter. Well, in precisely the same fashion, you have to have a driver for behavior. You have to have a driver for the realities that your mind outputs. And the driver is the goal that you hold. The quality of the goal is of key importance. You can't get a high-quality goal out of a low-quality intention. So the pool of intentions are of utmost importance to how you're going to behave in your life. Now you go back and you hear this man 2,000 years ago that says, first order of business for a human being, if you think of God, if you think of neighbor, if you think of self, the first order of business is you've got to hold this condition in your mind. Now let's do a practicum on goals driving behavior and how that happens. Once you set a goal, the quality of the goal determines the quality of the filter that filters your perception. There's some Harvard statistics that tell us that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, that is, there are 10,000 units, measurable units of electrical activity, that in that same time frame, the reality that we experience, the output of our minds, that which drives our behavior, is made up of a maximum of 9 bits of information. Very small, select bit of information actually shows up in your reality. And the information is selected and organized according to the stresses created by your goals. If you don't ever elevate an intention to a goal, you won't have a stress that will move your behavior. And basically what we'll find is stress, to define it, is this. Stress is a difference between the way we want it to be and the way we perceive it to be. Or the way it is. The difference between the way we want it to be and the way it is. And sometimes the way it is just the way we perceive it. They're not necessarily the same. So let's use the example I used earlier of the tack. If I sit on a tack, I experience a stress. I want comfort in a certain part of my anatomy. And the way I want it to be is not the way it is. And so I go into action. In order to do what? Alleviate the stress. And so my behavior becomes the mechanism that balances what I want and what I see. So I have a goal, it's what I want, and I have a way that I see what's happening in the world, and that's what I see, or that's the way it is. And if there's a difference, the degree of difference will be the degree of motivation I have to act. So let's take that now into a practical example. Let's imagine that you had heard about this workshop happening tonight, and you decided that you might want to come to it, and you wanted to bring some friends. And let's imagine that you've got one friend on each that lives on each side of you. You know, their driveway's 50 yards down the road from yours on each side. And you meet those two friends, you say, hey, you know, tomorrow night there's this workshop called Getting the Stress You Need. I'd really like to go and see it. Would you like to come with me? And one of the neighbors says, well, you know, actually, I was thinking about going to the movies tomorrow night, so I don't know whether I'll do that or not, but you know, it sounds like a good idea. It sounds like an interesting topic. I'll think about that. I think I might go. And by the way, if I don't go, you know, there's a really good movie playing. How would you like to join me, and we'll go to a movie? And you say, well, you know, I was really wanting to go to that workshop, but, you know, I did want to see that movie, so let me think about that. And the third neighbor staying there, he says, well, gee, you know, I'd like to go to the workshop or to the movie. Okay, well, I'll think about it too. So you now have three people, each with two intentions, movies, workshop. Now, this afternoon rolls around, and you decide to pick one of those intentions. It's going to be either the movies, that's one intention, or the workshop. You decide to do one or the other. Now, obviously you're here, so you decided, you set the intention, you converted it to a goal, you set a goal to be here. So notice that the way you wanted it to be was to be at the workshop. Your reality was you weren't there. And so what did that goal bring forward from your perceptual memory and from your mind? It brought forward a reality that gave you a set of instructions as to how to get here for this workshop. That's the only way you got here. If you hadn't set the goal, you wouldn't be here because your mind would not have motivated you nor shown you how to get here. Now so there we have the workshop was elevated from an intention to a goal. And therefore, it became the reality that drove your behavior. Now, your next-door neighbor decided, I don't think I'm going to go to that workshop. I want to do the movie. And so a different intention was converted or elevated to a goal. And his intention that he converted was to a goal was to go to the movies. Now, his driveway was just 50 yards down the street from yours. He drove out the same driveway perhaps at the very same moment that you did. But he's not here. Why not? Because he had a different intention that he converted to a goal. And his mind organized the units of perceptual memory that he had much differently than yours. And his mind showed him how to get to the movie theater on time for the movie. That is, if his goal system allows him to be on time. Maybe he was late. Who knows? You know, that last-minute dash to the movie syndrome. Okay? So he went to a totally different place. He got totally different instructions from his mind. His reality was completely different from yours. For one reason and one reason only. He had a different goal than you did. And the way he wanted it to be was at the movies, and he wasn't there. So what did his mind say? I know how to alleviate your stress. Here's how we get to the movies. We come out the driveway, and we drive in the other direction. We don't drive in the direction of the workshop. like the neighbor did. And he's sitting watching a movie right now because his behavior reduced his stress. It fulfilled the way he wanted it to be. And so when you start to see that whole mechanism operating, then you see that for a human being to do any behavior, if you think about the Creator, if you think about God, and there is any behavior to be done, where would you want to start? Where is your highest and best reality going to come from? Is it going to come from a mind that's in fear? Not likely. If you go back and you listen to this man 2,000 years ago, he spoke about fear as a demon to be cast out. He knew exactly how this mind operated. He knew far more about how the mind operates than we even start to comprehend today. And he treated this as a demon to be cast out. You remember? Perfect love casts out fear. You know what perfect love is in the Aramaic language? Perfect love is rachma and kubah set in the mind. And what he was essentially saying is, if you want to eradicate fear from your life, you've got to set those two filters, and you've got to be responsible for keeping them set. Now, you might have a pool that has different intentions and different perceptions in them. And someone comes along and triggers those intentions and those perceptions, and you find yourself with rachma and kubah gone from your mind and being in hostility or fear. And if so, then the behavior-driving realities that come forward, you have a reality formation system within your mind, and the behavior-driving realities that come forward will be based on what goals are resonated in your mind. And if that person can resonate in you fear, the intention from fear will be negative. The reality that comes forward from a fearful intention will be constructed in a way that shows you what is threatening. About the object of intention, God, neighbor, or self. So you have in you, in your pool of perceptions, brain cells that hold information about threat. And if that's the active filter over intentions and perceptions, then your mind will structure a reality that shows you something threatening about God, about neighbor, about self. If the hostility filter is the one that's set, you'll get a totally different quality of reality. The reality that will come forward from the hostility filter will always show you what is irritating. About the object of attention. If Rachman and Kubah are set, your mind will always show you something loving about your object of attention. Now, again, let's take that into a practical realm. Let's imagine you have this person in your life that is the love of your life. I love you, I honor you, I cherish you, I will love you forever. Now, your mind is showing you in your reality lots of things that you love about them. But what happens when they give you the look? You got anybody in your life that knows how to give you the look? What does that look do? Does it resonate a different filter in you? If it resonates fear in you, and you are not in charge of your own mind, and you don't understand the first law of governing in the mind, then what's going to happen is your goals toward them will be based upon negative intentions. And in setting those negative goals, what your mind is going to show you is something threatening about them. Now, how many have had it happen? They give you the look and all of a sudden it's, don't touch me, don't come near me, I never want to see you again. It's like, wait a minute, how is this possible? A moment ago this was the love of your life, how do you convert to, how do you switch to? They're the same person, you're the same person, what changed? The only thing that changed was the active filter in your mind. And now you have a pool of intentions that show you threat, and your mind builds your image, your picture of them, your reality about them out of that pool of perceptual memory. And they show up in your mind as threatening. Whose job is it to do something about that? Yours or theirs? Whose thoughts produce the chemistry, the stresses in your mind? I would offer it's only you. You're the one that's liable for how this whole process operates. If that person resonates in you, the hostility filter with the look, then what will happen is you will all of a sudden be irritated. Now let's look at that one in a practical sense. How many have heard the story? You know, we've all heard stories about the, you know, little 5'2" woman who had this 6'9" gorilla of a husband who always beat up on her and abused her. And so every time she looked at him with the fear filter active, what did she feel? What did she experience as the reality in her mind? She saw, her mind selected evidence that showed her what was threatening about him. But we've all heard it said that one day something cracked in her mind, right? Well, you know what cracked? She shifted from fear to hostility. Now, when you shift filters, when you move out of fear, your mind will no longer produce a threatening reality. And the minute that hostility flipped in and she went to destructive intentions and therefore her mind showed her what was irritating, she went to a different pool of perceptions. And stored there was all the information she held about being in irritation. And now she is really peeved. And you don't want to get in her way, do you? And neither does he, even though he's 6'9", because he's in trouble. And the only difference is that she flipped from one filter to another. What the Master was telling us 2,000 years ago is that if you always want the highest and best output from your mind, you keep perfect love active in your mind. Fear is not possible. Hostility is not possible. What you will find is the store of intentions and the store of perceptions will always show you what is loving about the object of your attention.
Well, does that mean that I just have to lay down and I've got this neighbor that's, you know, you're talking about neighbor here, I've got this neighbor that's going to attack me, I just lay down and let him attack? No, it doesn't mean you passively accept abuse. But what you do, especially if you've got a neighbor that's about abuse, is you want to have the most intelligent, the highest capacity mind possible to see what can be done in that circumstance. Which mind is that? I would offer it's going to be the mind of love. That's going to give you the best evidence possible. If you've ever been in a courtroom and you've watched the opposing attorney go after the defense witness, what's the first thing they do? They get them either into hostility or fear. Why? Because at that moment they're stupid. They make mistakes. And so recognize that. The Greeks had this saying that whom the gods would destroy, they first make angry. Why? Because we'll destroy ourselves if we're in anger. This produces chemicals that are stressors in our cellular structure. The neuropeptides that land in the cell, that generate the chemistry inside the cell, is up to us. First law, keep the condition of love in your mind. And let's take an intermission.